The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Good morning all, this is Ryan Tubridy with you. It's Wednesday, the 15th of January, middle of the week, middle of the month. It's the 9:05 now. The text number is 51551. You can email ryan@rte.ie. Always good to hear from you. To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. What a beautiful book. It's also a gorgeous movie with Gregory Peck, as you well know. And the place in which that particular story is set is currently the subject of a movie and a life story, essentially, of a lawyer who won a scholarship to Harvard and ended up defending people on death row, often getting innocent men off death row. And he has one hell of a story. That's in a movie that stars Jamie Foxx and Brie Larson, among others. And that lawyer himself will be joining us on the programme this morning. It's about justice. It's about injustice. It's about miscarriages of justice. It's about the Deep South. It's about lynching. It's about America today and America into the future. And we'll bring that to you a little later on. Meanwhile, since we last met, I finished Marita Conlon McKenna's book. We spoke to her on Monday. I was two-thirds of the way through, so I polished it off hungrily last night because it's called The Hungry Road. And I'm so glad I got to the end because it is the story of Daniel O'Connell briefly makes a cameo appearance in it, and then a number of families, but particularly the one family in particular, who are stuck in and watching them descend into skin, bone, degradation, dilapidation, and the great hunger in Skibbereen. And ultimately, as was the way, there's death, destruction, indignity, and departure. Essentially, then, of course, from on the coffin ships, as they were so well named, across the Atlantic Ocean. I couldn't stop thinking about the conditions, the filth, the sickness, the waves, and the death, and then arrival onto the shores of New York, like spat out of the ocean onto the shores of New York, onto Ellis Island, and just that the hand up going, can we have anything but what we've just come from? As the character says in one stage to the fellow evicting them from the land, you're kicking us out of our home, out of our village, and now out of our country. I mean, it is very powerful as a microcosm of the famine story. And then, of course, Ellis Island, Statue of Liberty, and the sense that actually they were able to earn a couple of dollars and eat food, of which there was none. Just it is amazing. And one of the most amazing places in New York to visit for an Irish person is the Tenement Museum. If you haven't been to see it, it is just breathtaking because you just see, imagine like one room with a bit of a bed and half a bowl and maybe a fork was might as well have been a mansion after what they had left, and the workhouses, which were essentially like camps, separated from parents, children, and just, as I say, vile conditions. But then New York gave them that hope. Same thing happened in Canada, same thing in Australia, and indeed across the way in Britain. But in fairness to, I think that if you were a book club, if you were a book club and you were thinking, what would we start with? This would be a read. It's very, very easy to read, but it's very engaging and challenging in terms of bringing you into that world. The Hungry Road by Marita Conlon McKenna. And of course, a lot of you listening today would have read The Hawthorn, Under the Hawthorn Tree as kids. But like I say, that's quite the story, no doubt about it. I don't know if you've got kids or grandkids, and if they're allowed to be on an iPad or a tablet or a phone in the morning. And or, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I hate to be so, the kids these days, I don't want to do that, because I was a kid once years ago. And I loved it. And one of the first things I did when I got up was watch TV. I got my education on British politics by watching Michael Parkinson, Anna Ford, David Frost, Good Morning Britain. It was definitely not Ireland AM. No offense to those guys. They're great. And we watch them still. But no, it was Morning Ireland, whatever it was called, Morning AM or Good Morning Britain. Roland Ratt was in the middle of it, and for some weird reason. But it worked. So I knew all about Margaret Thatcher and Michael Parkinson and Michael Heseltine and ultimately all of these characters. And then I'd watch Spitting Image. It was an introduction to it. So I was educated by the TV. I don't know if the kids, when they go to their screens in the morning, are they doing the same thing? By the way, I also watched all the cartoons, incidentally. I'm not saying that I was sitting down as an eight-year-old wondering if Cecil Parkinson was going to be caught having a fling with the secretary. I mean, that came later. But I loved the TV. So I wasn't, I'm not anti-screen at all. It's just that I didn't then take the TV with me and walk to school looking at it. I didn't take the TV and bring it into my room. And then I didn't take the TV. You know where I'm going with that. But in France, they've decided to do a little report to find out what is the effect of giving those kids, thinking maybe under 10, the screen in the morning. And here's what they're saying. They said that if they're left to watch the screens in the morning, they're 3 times more likely to suffer speech or learning difficulties. So it's quite serious. And they're also likely to exhibit disturbed behaviour and that they might become agitated from watching televisions or tablets or mobiles in the morning and then tend to remain disturbed for the rest of the day. So it's just not a great habit to get into. I think that's what they're saying. Passive screen watching can make them more prone to attacking other children at school and on. So it's not a really a great thing. But don't you get tired? I went to see 1917 late in the afternoon yesterday, and this is the World War One movie, the Sam Mendes. And it's an extraordinary film. It's made in a way that it's like one shot. Do you know what I mean? So the camera's constantly moving, following these two guys who have to deliver a message to the front line, to the British major to say, don't go over the top and invade that bunch of Germans. It's a trap. But the hazards along the way, it's kind of like, it's like almost like, I presume, a video game or something, that they have to try and avoid all the obstacles and get there in one piece. And it's an intriguing prospect. I will say this about cinema. I love going to the cinema. This film is a total waste of time watching outside the cinema. Total waste of time. And if you do watch and you go, no, isn't that interesting? I'm no sympathy for you. And if you don't have time to go to the cinema, then don't watch it. And if you do, you just remember that it's built for the big screen. Anyway, I didn't think it was the best film of the year by any means. I didn't think it was as good as Joker. I didn't think it was as good as... It was kind of around Jojo Rabbit. It was about 3.5 stars thereabouts. But I did love it and would highly recommend it, especially if you're into history. You couldn't stop looking. You couldn't take your eyes off the screen. And at one point, my eyes were getting heavy because I was kind of tired. You know, this cinema does that to me. It's almost like an anesthetic. You just go, I must stay. But I was just so engaged by what I was watching that I didn't want to miss anything, which is a great thing. I'm feeling it's getting closer to 4 stars now as I'm talking about it. Anyway, it comes highly recommended. In fact, Rosina texts in to say, I saw it yesterday too, and it's remarkable. It'll stay with you for many reasons. Up there were Paths of Glory and Apocalypse Now. For some reason, I got into watching a few Kirk Douglas movies over the recent few weeks. And Paths of Glory is one of the great... It's an anti-war movie, really, the Drumhead Court. And he's brilliant in it. What did I watch? I watched a film called Ace in the Hole. Did you ever hear that one? And he's a journalist in it. And he goes... He's really angry. He was obviously successful in New York. He goes to a small town. He's like, give me a job. I'm from New York. I want a big job as a journalist. And a story breaks by... He comes across a story. There's a guy in a well or in a mine, and he turns this little story into a national event, and it just then throws up all these ethical issues and scruples type questions. So maybe it's a journal thing, but it's called Ace in the Hole. It's widely available to watch and worth a look. Stephen Ballymount says, I adore To Kill a Mockingbird along with The Time to Kill. Real classics. I can't wait to see the new Jamie Foxx movie. Yeah, I bought my oldest a film poster of To Kill a Mockingbird at the end of The Leaving Cert because it's a beautiful poster. Look it up online. It's a really nice, it's kind of sketchy type thing of Gregory Peck. And it was a nice idea for a gift if you're looking to give something for a bookish person in your life. I bought To Kill a Mockingbird in a graphic novel form in Easton's last week, says a text. It's graphic novels are tremendous. They are great. Again, gateway is the word of the week for me. It's a great gateway into reading for younger people. There's a famous one called, I think it's called Mouse, M-A-U-S, about the Nazis, and that's, you know, a classic. There's some brilliant Irish history being done by graphic novelists in this country. There are great graphic novel artists and who work for Marvel and DC as well. So if you're kind of thinking, while I get my 14, 15 year old to try and get him to read, not into books, get stuck into that. I was spoon fed, and I spoon fed myself on comics as a kid. Queezer, Beezer, whatever they're called, Dandy, Beano, Whizzer and Chips, all of them, and then Oink later on. Like, I loved comics, absolutely loved going to Sale of Works and buying them for 3p, 5p, whatever. And again, once they're reading, it doesn't matter a damn. Art Spiegelman, thank you for that, is the author of Mouse. Anyway, just on the screens thing, I got an interesting email in on the WhatsApp group Horror. And I'll bring you that. It says, I was in a WhatsApp group from my child's class some years ago, and it had been set up by a parent. But unbeknownst to me, they also had, here it is, the Splinter Group. This seems to be the revelation to end all revelations in the WhatsApp groups this week. And this left out a small number of children. And there were many days, says our correspondent, that I watched groups of children heading off to parties, days out to watch movies or matches. And I was always thinking, my son must have just missed the memo. I thought he wasn't paying attention when the arrangement was being made at break time, and I blamed him at one point for not taking part in the class socially. I had absolutely no idea that a splinter group was at play. The problem with the big WhatsApp groups, says you, is that you might not realise that a few have been excluded by the admin person. The admin person. That's the worst job in the world. Largely, I mean, for the purpose of this conversation, you don't want to be an admin person in a WhatsApp group, unless you look at the list. Anyway, back to the email. You might, as in my son's case, just think that certain people are just not turning up to events, or maybe they're antisocial. Maybe they don't like to get involved. It can be very damaging for the child, as in our case. It's a form of social orchestration by the parents who get to decide who's in and who's out of their children's friends group. My son is only now, years later, getting brave enough to make friends with some of those boys who had no idea about the WhatsApp group in the first instance. So, yeah, that was apropos of the principal of the school who said that he finds the parents' WhatsApp groups to be a little damaging to the morale and the vibe in schools, broadly speaking. Elsewhere, Billie Eilish is, you probably saw this, but she's 18 years old, and she has been announced as the new James Bond theme song singer. I think this is a brilliant decision. She is quirky, kooky, interesting. She doesn't look like all the others, and I think she's just tremendous. Reading about her in the Mail today, she is the 18-year-old who is dominating the charts, and she's now going to be the singer for the movie, which is called No Time to Die. I was in the movie in the cinema yesterday, and the posters for No Time to Die were everywhere. They're so stylish and big and Bondy and fun. Anyway, she's about to take her music to a new audience by singing the title song for No Time to Die, which she has written with her brother. As it turns out, he's 22. His name is Phineas. That's a great name, isn't it? But her full name is Billie Eilish Pirate Baird O'Connell. Did you know that? I heard that she is the homeschooled daughter of jobbing LA actors with Irish roots. So she's an O'Connell. So her next album cover should be on O'Connell Street, obviously. She's been here, in fact, at the Electric Picnic. She said, I'm part Irish. This is my home. And she's just doing so, so well. She was in Glastonbury, and she's talking about how excited she was talking to Paul McCartney on FaceTime because she was having a sitting with Stella McCartney about what outfit she was going to wear. And she is a superstar, and she's just doing very, very well at the moment. It seems that she's clinched a deal with Apple TV Plus, which will see the streaming service pay $25 million for a documentary about her. So I seem to remember having a social conversation with Dave Fanning. I think it was about 3 years ago when she was 15, yeah. And Dave and his obviously very astute daughter had been talking about this pop star that they were following around the place. And when I say following around, they're going to her gigs and so on, and saying she's going to be the next big thing, and she's amazing. And there was about 10 people at the gig or whatever. And they became very friendly with her parents as well. And so there you are. That's a little Irish connection. But Dave's always ahead of the game when it comes to music. All speaking of music, Yamaha Corporation has warned people not to squeeze inside musical instrument cases. Would somebody tell the RTÉ Concert Orchestra this? Because they're often coming in and out. And I noticed that the ones with the bigger instruments try to climb into the cases to get away early. And they're being told now by Yamaha, it's official, don't do that. Like, it's not good. There's a health and safety issue. But they probably have been reading the paper about this former Nissan motor boss who fled Japan, concealed inside one. I'm sure you read about that. He was being accused of misappropriating company funds. So he escaped from Japan at the end of December for Lebanon. And he got away, by all accounts, inside one of these instrument cases. So Yamaha are saying, please don't do that, just in case anyone was thinking of doing just that. Right, let's take some music. Good to hear. I'm not the only geek, says James in Newbridge. No, you're not. Let's play a part. This is the club we live in here, so you're absolutely part of it. What are you saying? I was in national school and I used to sneak down at night to watch Newsnight. Whoa, when Thatcher's leadership was being challenged by the Conservatives. I loved the news. I knew all the ministers of the 89 Irish government. And I didn't know one Liverpool player. Yeah, you might have known one or two by osmosis when they played the bit of sport at the end of the news. But yes, and then I remember that time well, because then this TV programme came on. Myself and my brother would be very excited because this show came on, starring Ian Richardson as a chief whip in a program called House of Cards. And it was the original version of it, all based around the Thatcher leadership struggle and the intrigue around the hallowed corridors of Westminster. And it was delicious television, no doubt about that. It's 9:21. We are open for business. Fine Young Cannibals at 9:25. People like stationery. Right, this is kind of an odd thing to say, but I have cups and things with pens, and but I found a pen, like it's cheap enough pen, but I've fallen madly in love with it so much so that I went online and found and I bought like a bag of them, and it's called the Uniball Air, and it's about 50p, but it writes beautifully. So all these letters and cards that I got in the last 2 months, I've been writing back to people in the last 2 days. In fact, I'll be doing more today. I have 2 bags of post to try and get back to as many people. But with this pen, it makes it, it writes so well, it nearly does the writing for you. It's a lovely thing. And I have very nice pens, and I have one really nice pen, but I didn't bother digging it out for this because it's a bit fussy. Whereas this one, parfait. On the famine, Wells said, we need to remember we were once seeking refuge too. It never leaves my mind. It never leaves my mind about people and this country and our relationship to them. Julie Corcoran says, good morning. I have a 12-year-old daughter called Alana. She's obsessed with history. Good start. She's watched all the war movies she can get her hands on, including Saving Private Ryan. Would 1917 be suitable for her? On the scale, where would the film sit? I would love to bring. If she got through the opening 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan, she'll have no trouble with 1917. There's a few bits. If you don't like enormous rats and innards, you'll be fine. To be honest with you, I don't think that'd be an issue. I think there'd be slightly bigger issue with Jojo Rabbit, because there's a couple of moments in it where you just go, oh no. But for 1917 as a war movie, I think you're safe as houses there. So good luck with that, Julie. And here's to Alana's ongoing interest in history. And Mary Kelly's in Cavan. There was a great graphic novel about a year ago by Daniel O'Connell, written by a lad from Tulsk in Roscommon, I think. I can't remember the name of it or him, but my kids read it and loved it. I can tell you because we looked it up. It's Daniel O'Connell, A Graphic Life by Jody Moylan. Now, I haven't seen that, but I'm on a total Daniel O'Connell buzz at the moment. So I would love to get my hands on that. I will endeavour to do so. And I was saying to Olivia O'Leary recently when she was in to talk to us about Marion Finucane before the show in the Green Room about her 2-part documentary on Daniel O'Connell. If you didn't see it, it's worth checking out. I'm sure it's still lingering on the player, but it was a lovely reintroduction to the great liberator. You could also try Sub City Comics on Dame Street. These are great shops that do this, that cater for people who are into a bit of science fiction, graphic novels, that kind of thing. You'll always meet interesting people in shops like that. That's what I say. Right, let me tell you about our competition this week, because it's pretty exciting, say the least. 9th of February, that's the date, the 9th of February 1995, that's when Riverdance, the show, premiered at the Point Theatre in Dublin. And this was obviously the 7-minute Eurovision Interval Act performance, which had wowed TV audiences across the world, then became a full-length stage show, and from there headed out on an adventure that would see it tour the globe and achieve worldwide acclaim. So it's a great thing for Ireland to see the flag flying so well in an artistic sense all over the world, and it's now coming back home to celebrate 25 years with 5 performances from the 6th to the 9th of February at the 3 Arena. And you could be at the gala night exactly 25 years to the day. That's the 9th of Feb in the 3 Arena. Not only the daily winner will go into a draw then for a trip to New York, New York, to see Riverdance 25 at Radio City Music Hall on Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. So that's only weeks away, really. And that prize includes return flights from Dublin to New York on Monday, the 9th of March, and returning from New York to Dublin on Thursday, the 12th of March. 3 overnights then in a double room at the Sheraton Manhattan Times Square Hotel. If you want to take part, you just have to try and answer as many questions as possible in a minute. How about that? And you can text 51551 or call us, even better, 1850 715 900.